If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the win column in the Big 12 standings. It's good to be back after a two-game skid.
Yeah, so we will be doing an instant reaction to the Kansas State game that just wrapped up in Manhattan, Texas Tech winning 77-63. We will also touch on the West Virginia game from this past weekend, since we did not do an instant reaction to that game. We'll talk about the upcoming schedule, including some halftime performance news that broke this afternoon. If you didn't purchase your ESPN Plus subscription, you can still make your money's worth. Since the next, two of the next four games are on ESPN Plus, and they will all fall within the month, so you don't have to pay for it once. There was some news that broke Wednesday morning with some football. I guess we'll talk a little bit about the national championship game that happened last night. Dinger Derby, of course. Your questions, what we learned, all good stuff. Before we get into basketball and the instant reaction, if you want to follow us on the Twitter, the show can be found at 23 Personnel. It's at 23 Personnel. You can follow me at Punts Suck and Michael at Michael_LBK. Also, I am recovering at a glacial pace over the flu.
You're sounding pretty good. You're sounding pretty strong over there. Sorry.
It's a lot better than it was. I will have good days and bad days, but this is so strange. I've never been sick for this long. I've probably never had the flu before. And for someone that had the flu shot, having the flu for this long, or maybe it was the flu and then like a sinus infection on top of it, whatever, stretched this thing out to 2 weeks. It's been brutal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I'm not getting fevers or anything. So I've been going to work, which may or may not be helping, but like there'll be times in the day where I'll just get like a splitting headache, or I'll have taken some medicine to help and it nearly knocks me out. I'm like just dragging. It's not been fun, but
no. And I didn't mean to do the announcer jinx like they always do with Moretti,
which they did tonight.
Yeah. When I talked about how strong you sounded and then, forced you to cough. But yeah, the Moretti jinx, I would be willing to bet that 90% of the free throws he's missed has been right before someone talked about how few times he misses a free throw. And then even talked about a jinx. Even Fran did the same thing the other night. There's no such thing as an announcer jinx.
Clank.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. And here's the thing. So Moretti missed a free throw tonight. On his third attempt of three, on shooting three, they brought it up. Like as he's shooting his second one, makes it, they go in depth about, hey, you know, he's one of the nation's best free throw shooters, never misses. Oh, you're gonna invoke the broadcast jinx, clank.
Yeah, and then they laughed.
Look what we did. All right, so Texas Tech takes down the Wildcats of Kansas State, 77-63. That 14-point victory, was frustrating. I mean, it's a comfortable win over a bad conference team. You felt you probably could have had at least twice that point differential tonight. At one point in the first half, you had a 15-point lead. And I put the call in, so maybe it's on me for a 40-point win tonight. because it looked like Kansas State was rolling over. They were missing a bunch of stuff. Texas Tech had finally cleaned up the turnovers for a stretch there at the beginning. After they went on that 10-0 run, the broadcast took note of this too. Tech had 7 straight possessions with a turnover. And that's how Kansas State got back into the game and got like to a 10-7 game. Texas Tech was real careless with the basketball tonight. They had 16 total team turnovers, which was way too many. They had I can't remember the exact number at the half, but it was probably 10 or 11 at halftime.
The second half was they cleaned up a little bit, but you know, to close out that first half was rough. That got Kansas State back in it, and then they had a tough stretch the first 7 or 8 minutes. And I know K-State ran off with a 9-0 run at one point, actually took the lead by one. It was, like you said, it just seemed like Tech was headed to cruising. You know, they just got to cruising altitude when they were up 32-17, and then just kind of forgot that they still had to keep playing basketball. I was impressed with Edwards, though. I mean,
oh, for sure,
Edwards had a huge career night.
Yeah, he sets his career high in points tonight with 24. He could have had 26, but Chris Beard there at the last possession called no shots, and Edwards was smart enough to take that, even though he was literally the only man on his side of the court. He could have easily scored that and gotten to 26. But as it was, he went 9 of 14 from the floor, shooting greater than 64%, 3 of 4 from 3, and a perfect 3 of 3 from the free throw line. Charity stripe. Other leaders, Davide Moretti had 14 points on 5 of 6 from the free throw line, 3 of 6 from field goal. All 6 of his shots were threes, and he hits 3 of them. McCullough was the only other Red Raider in double figures. Nope, just kidding. Jamias Ramsey also had 10. Ramsey had 10. McCullough had 10. Moretti 14. Edwards 24. Ramsey, that 10, it took him 12 shots to get there, and he fouled out. It was 1 of 5 from 3. Only got to the line 2 times and hit 1 of them. He had probably his quietest night as a Red Raider.
Yeah, I think he was frustrated with himself is kind of what I think that's where some of those fouls came from too. They seemed to be just frustration fouls. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have called him, but yeah, I think that was the first time he'd fouled out all year. Somehow this was only Holyfield's second time to foul out all year. Okay, that was what the broadcast guy said, but that doesn't sound right to me. I thought he'd fouled out at least twice before.
Well, I think the other games where he got in foul trouble, he was held out for so many minutes, he was able to avoid fouling out, but his absence was for such a large portion of the game. His presence on the, his absence was felt, I would say.
Yeah.
The other thing I found entertaining there at the end, one, the Kansas State fans like to taunt players that foul out by calling out the foot that the player said was a left, right, and then sit down when he sits down.
Mm-hmm.
They did it for both Ramsey and Holyfield. When they did it to Holyfield, there was a minute left in the game, down by 15, and you're taunting a player that just fouled out.
Like, yeah.
Good move,
I noticed
guys.
That too. I couldn't believe that they were still doing it.
There was probably 10 people left. I mean, there was not a lot of people there in the arena.
But they must have been right next to the ESPN Plus microphones.
Oh my gosh, ESPN Plus. I mean, I appreciate the fact that I was able to pause a stream tonight and get stuff done and then hit play and then be able to fast forward it. Like, it didn't skip. I never lost my spot, which was refreshing. But having to subscribe to another service was kind of bothersome. And I know there are a lot of other Tech fans that either weren't aware or hadn't been keeping up with the basketball schedule to know that, you know, the game tonight and then a couple more in January will be on ESPN Plus. It's another subscription service you have to pay for. I thought we had it through our Disney Plus subscription. We don't. Not a big deal. It's $5 a month. And like I said, three of the five games, the one tonight and then two of the next four are also on ESPN Plus. The last one being home versus West Virginia on the Wednesday, the 29th. So you only have to pay for 1 month and you get three games. Even if you subscribe after this game, you get two games strictly for Texas Tech. So it's $250 a game. That's not a bad pay-per-view price for a game. If you wanted to see this in person, would be $40 a head. Anyway,
yeah, it was fine. It's just another app you've got to download, another account you've got to create, another password you got to keep up with. That's just how things are now. But I think the broadcast was fine. The announcers were whatever. You don't always get the best announcers for random college basketball games anyway.
So the play-by-play guy would be a guy you'd probably get on ESPN. News or something.
Yes.
He wasn't bad. It's when they start having to reach for these color analysts. The guy tonight, Blanks, was a former Longhorn player, and throughout the broadcast made several comments or statements that you'd be like, he's never seen a Tech basketball game before. Cool. Didn't do any research. Good work, man. Anyways, two of the next four games are on ESPN Plus. If you haven't grabbed it, it's worth it just for the next couple of games. And then just to cancel it. Same kind of thing will come up in baseball when we'll probably be telling you guys to grab Texas Tech TV. I think that's $10 a month, but you get basically half of the baseball schedule, if not more, through that service. Anyways, back to the game tonight. We did mention you had a 15-point first half lead. I think Kansas State responded with like an 11-0 run and then continued that at the beginning of the second half. Was able there, probably middle of the second half, was when they pulled even and pulled ahead. But as the deeper, more talented team, We saw Texas Tech run up against us with Baylor not that long ago. You'd fight so hard to pull back within striking distance, and then it just seems like within a blink of an eye, Baylor was able to regain their 2-3-4 possession lead. And the same thing happened with Texas Tech. It very quickly went back up to an 8-point lead, and then stretched out to 11, and then into the game at 14. Once Texas Tech settled after Kansas State taking the lead there, it really never felt in question. Kansas State on the defensive side was able to give Texas Tech a lot of fits. Obviously, when you commit 16 turnovers, that's above average for Texas Tech. The Kansas State defense there was able to get the Chris Beard motion offense flustered a few times. You saw them rushing around, being careless, making really bad passes. It just wasn't enough from the Kansas State offensive side. Obviously, credit to the Texas Tech defense, Mark Adams there, for keeping them at 63 points. Ironically or coincidentally, both teams shot 47% from the field. Kansas State did it on 36 shots. Texas Tech put up 53.
Yeah, this was – I wish I could remember the stat, but I don't have access to it. But something they kept pointing out on the broadcast was how many points Tech scored tonight off of second-chance shots. And, you know, Tech out-rebounded Kansas State, at least on the offensive boards for sure. Defensive boards were dead even at 17, but – Tech had 14 offensive rebounds. K-State had six. So, in a lot, I don't say a lot of them, but you know, McCullough had four of those. McCullough was really, he was in the paint. He was working. He was getting some, some layups and some second shots himself. He was just getting some work done down there. And I was really impressed with that. But, for Tech to shoot that many more shots than their opponent, 53 versus 36, they were really able to get some stuff done on the offensive side and really fight for some rebounds. Probably the first time I've seen them do something, do it that well this year.
Yeah, and I was kind of making a joke when you were going through that. Texas Tech out-rebounded a team. That won't happen many times this season, so when it does, you guys take advantage of it. Total rebounds for Texas Tech tonight, 31 to Kansas State's 23. At one point in the first half, it was close to halftime, but Texas Tech had as many offensive rebounds as Kansas State had total rebounds, meaning that Texas Tech had that many more opportunities when Texas Tech missed a shot to get points again within that same possession. As Michael said, Texas Tech had 14 total offensive rebounds to Kansas State's 6. Kansas State had 17 defensive rebounds. You also had 17, but you had almost as many offensive rebounds, second chance opportunities, as they did rebounding the ball off of a miss, which again allows you to put up 17 more shots than Kansas State. You both, like we said earlier, 47%. You shot much better from three than they did. You shot nearly 40%. They shot under 30. And then both teams, they shot a handful more free throws than you did. They had 30, 40, or 26. You were more efficient with it. You shot 77% where they shot 74. You did what you were supposed to do against a team like Kansas State. You obviously will take a road win in the Big 12 any night of the week, even against a Kansas State. You can't be dropping games against a team like this and expect to be competing for anything meaningful there towards the end of the season. As Michael pointed out at the top of the show, this gets you back on the winning side. It brings you to 2-2 in conference play. Kansas State falls to 0-4. Remember last season, Kansas State only had 4 total conference losses on the season. They're already there after the first 4. Your next upcoming schedule, you've got some opportunity to make up some ground on those 2 early losses. You will host Iowa State this weekend. Obviously, any game at home you feel really good about. You go to TCU tonight. They are down nearly 30 points on the road to West Virginia.
Yeah, I was going to mention that if you didn't. Yeah, current score is 71-45.
TCU has taken advantage of a favorable schedule so far. They started conference play 3-0. But I think one, it's difficult to go on the road to Morgantown. Obviously, everybody knows that you had your struggles there this past weekend. Them losing to West Virginia wouldn't have been that big of a surprise, but losing by 30 points maybe says that TCU wasn't as good as their record was showing so far. But you'll have a chance next Tuesday night in Fort Worth, and then between that TCU game, you'll host West Virginia the following Wednesday. But next weekend, you will also host Kentucky for your final non-conference game until a tournament, which would be just a lot of fun. But you've got opportunity here to make up a little bit of ground. I do want to go back and talk about Saturday's game for a little bit. You lost on the road in Morgantown, 66-54. We were kind of joking a little minute ago about how Texas Tech actually out-rebounded somebody. West Virginia was able to absolutely dominate the paint with their size. They affected your offense in a big way. They kept you out of the paint. They blocked a lot of shots. And then once you did put up a shot, they were more than likely coming down with a rebound if you missed it. Moretti finished the game with 16 points. on 6 of 13 from the field, 4 of 9 from three. Didn't shoot any free throws.
Yeah, I thought that was odd.
There was a massive disparity in free throw attempts in this game. And it had absolutely everything to do with what West Virginia was dictating when they were on defense to keep you out of the paint. They kept you from being aggressive and driving more so than an issue with officiating.
Sure. Well, and Moretti was, he was on fire from at the start, at least, you know, at the beginning of the game, he was hitting quite a few shots, which was, you know, just a welcome sight from most of us Tech fans. He's been in a slump, what feels like the majority of the year. And I'm hoping that, you know, that game in Morgantown and tonight he shot pretty well, that he's going to kind of regain his confidence and his ability to make those outside shots. So, I mean, that was notable that he was the high point after having such a, you know, a tough go of it. And then the other thing, I didn't get to just sit and watch the entire game. So I know Holyfield was in foul trouble, but he had 3 fouls. He had 2 turnovers and 0 points in 11 minutes. Did you get to watch the entire thing? Did Beard just practically sit him down and that was that?
From my recollection, he did not play a whole bunch. Obviously, when you only count 11 minutes in a 40-minute game.
And you're a starter.
Yeah. You would think as a starter, as one of your only big men, he just wasn't making much of an impact except for picking up quick fouls. And then obviously you saw Chris Beer with a quick hook, pulled him out, and then he basically sat. I know there were large, long stretches of the game where you went exclusively 5 guards, where you were saying, okay, West Virginia, you're going to try to keep us out of the paint with your size. We're going to try to combat that with speed and athleticism and quickness. So you saw guys like Holyfield not get a ton of minutes because, you know, you saw Ramsey, McCullough, Clark, Moretti, Nadolny, like they were all out there at the same time. And you didn't have the size to compete with them. And when you tried, it wasn't really working. So Chris Beard obviously was looking for something to negate their size, and he was going to go with speed. Holyfield only played 11 minutes. Another game where, like we pointed out before, he just picks up a lot of quick fouls, and then he sits for a long stretch of the game. West Virginia was able to hold Texas Tech to only 32% shooting and 24% in the second half. It wasn't really out of hand at halftime, but when a defense clamps down on you and only allows you to make 1 out of every 4 shots in the second half, you're not making up much of any of a deficit. West Virginia shot nearly 50% in the first half and 33% in the second half.
I think they went with a small lineup right before halftime, and I think it kind of caught West Virginia off guard a little bit, and then I think they adapted to it in the second half.
Yeah, so for the game, Texas Tech only shot 28%, where West Virginia shot 42%. And then when we talked about rebounds, they out-rebounded you 46-33. Your 33 rebounds is more rebounds than you got tonight, but obviously when you give up 46, West Virginia was able to do a lot with those. Surprisingly, Texas Tech had more points in the paint, despite what I just said about West Virginia going with their size.
This didn't make any sense to me. I'm not sure how this worked out, but yeah, Tech ended up with 28 in the paint and West Virginia had 26. It's not like it was a big disparity, but I figured it would be.
You know, for sure. And then West Virginia was able to get a lot of production off the bench with 41 points coming off the bench to Texas Tech's 15.
Yeah, and that's, you know, with Shannon out, he was out that game. He was out tonight too. I can't remember what he tweaked. Do you remember, Spencer? It's like a quad or a back, or it seems like a muscle.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that he was, and I miss it on the broadcast, but LeBar said that he had ran up to the scorer's table like he was going to check in, and then Beard pulled him back. So I don't know if that was Shannon trying to sneak into the game and say he was ready to go, or if Chris Beard thought better of it once they got into the game. But hopefully Shannon's back. There have been some strange rumors that Joel and Tomboy's eligibility waiver may be getting a second glance from the NCAA, that he may be hearing back possibly this week, that he's able to play here pretty soon, which would be pretty big. He was a athletic big at Nevada, able to put up, a dozen points and grab a lot of rebounds. Also, about this point, we're looking to get an update about Tyreek Smith and his leg, his foot, to see if he would be able to come back. Another big to add back into the lineup. I'm not sure the validity of these rumors to say, if Tomboy's coming back or not, or what kind of impact they can have, having not played for half of the season, looking at, the final dozen or so conference games. But you wouldn't turn down any extra production coming off the bench. So if one or both of them are eligible, I would expect Chris Beard to work them in. I just don't know if and when we would expect to hear anything on Joel and Tomboy.
Yeah, there's no telling. I'm hoping there's some truth to those rumors. And, we could use Smith. He's, 6'8", 205. He's pretty light, but he's athletic. I think he could take over for Ramsey, who always somehow ends up on defense under the basket. But Ramsey's doing well. I mean, he's holding his own down there, but it's just kind of odd how that happens a lot on those rotations.
Yeah. I mean, outside of tonight where he only scored the 10 and then fouled out. Okay, so I think we've already kind of keyed up the upcoming schedule. This weekend, home again versus Iowa State. We saw some news come out this afternoon about who the halftime performer is going to be, Michael.
Yeah, our good friend, I'm just kidding, I don't know the guy at all, but Davis Smith, the guerrilla lawyer, he's bringing Vanilla Ice to Lubbock, guys, and he's going to perform at halftime of the Iowa State game this Saturday. So all you people like me who grew up in the 90s, you're going to have some nostalgic feels, or a chance for some. But anyway, it's pretty interesting. I forgot. There's a video that he shot that has him just talking about him coming. And he says something like, "We're going to go full gorilla on this." And I'm not sure what full gorilla means, but I'm ready to find out. And I wish I'd have gotten, because my wife and I always get tickets for a few games because childcare is such a big deal to try to plan ahead of time. So we didn't get tickets for this one, and now I'm wishing I had.
I may see if Samantha's available to hold down the fort and for me to sneak out and go to that game.
Yeah, 3 p.m. That's a pretty good time. That might be nap time. You might could run out, watch a game real quick, come back.
Use that media pass that I have.
Yeah, you haven't used it yet, have you?
I need to figure out. No, I haven't yet.
I wouldn't even know where to go, man.
I mean, I was told where to go into, like which door to go into. But I'd almost like want to show up and kind of see another media member walk in, and like I kind of trail them in, just so I know exactly where I'm going. Because I've not walked through like an entrance on the ground level of the USA and gone through like the back downstairs hallways or anything like that. So once I got through the door, I'd be like, okay, now what? Like if you were to walk in trying to get up to the press box at the Jones, Michael, even if I told you which door to go through and you walked through it, you'd be like, okay, now what?
Because
the elevator that you have to find is not really clear where it's at, or it's not really marked or anything. You just kind of have to know or follow somebody that does know.
Yeah, that's all I could think about the whole time you were saying this, was how lost I would have been if you hadn't been my guide at the Jones. I just would have been aimlessly wandering around in the parking lot.
Yeah, so I assume that's what I would be like the first game, especially since I'd probably have to park out at UMC and ride the shuttle over anyways. But yeah, so Vanilla Ice performing this weekend, home game Saturday. First real home game since the students came back. And then next Tuesday night at TCU, so you get another instant reaction. Regular show mashup. Following Saturday, home versus Kentucky. And then next, the following Wednesday, home versus West Virginia. If you haven't picked up your ESPN Plus subscription, I guess you can wait until next Tuesday. But it's $5 for the month. You got at least two games on there that you can watch. Obviously, anything else on ESPN Now, or sorry, Big 12 Now on ESPN Plus would be available for you to watch. If you just watch those two Tech games, it's $2.50. Not a bad price for pay-per-view. All right. Michael, anything else you want to wrap up with basketball before we move on to just a little bit of football news?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. We'll see what Vanilla Ice does this Saturday.
I'm sure it's going to be wild. All right. So, kind of in a surprising twist with Tom Herman clearing house down there in Austin, firing basically all of his coaching staff and his coordinators. Defensive coordinator Todd Orlando is hired here at Texas Tech as an assistant head coach and linebackers coach.
Yeah, this was, we speculated on this in the Slack chat, and I think someone was talking about that and how he could possibly come in. And then I think we kind of dismissed it a little bit, thinking, well, then that sure is going to make Patterson feel like, or how would that dynamic work? That was part of the issue. And then the other part of the issue was that Texas was at the very bottom of passing defense, just the same as Tech. So I'm not sure what that's actually going to fix, because it's kind of the same. I don't know. There may be more to that. I know that some, the guys that were coaching DBs are either no longer here or they've been reassigned. And I think Patterson's taken over some of that himself.
Yeah, I think Patterson is still listed as a defensive coordinator, but now he's the safeties coach, which was previously held by Kerry Cooks, the guy that was, I guess, poached from the OU staff. But I guess we're now understanding when a lot of the OU fans were like, good luck, what they meant by that. Supposedly he was a pretty good recruiter, was not credited with any specific recruits for Texas Tech. And obviously the defensive backfield for the Tech defense was the weakest unit on the field on either side. The cornerbacks coach still kind of up in the air. When we heard the Orlando news, we also heard that the quarterbacks coach from Texas may be joining him on this staff. However, almost immediately that little bit of news was walked back by the organization that broke it, which I think was Football Scoop, and they do a great job following all the coaching changes. I have not heard anything since then about who's going to be coaching cornerbacks. But the assumption was that Juice Brown, as he's known, and Kerry Cooks were not going to be retained for this staff, and that Wells was going to bring in Todd Orlando and then Naviar, or I'm sure I'm butchering that name, from Texas, to help shore up the defensive backfield. when news first broke and we were thinking about, okay, we're going to have two defensive coordinators on the staff. My initial take, and it's going to be this way until, you know, spring ball rolls around and we see how they work together. I would argue that Keith Patterson and or Todd Orlando are the best defensive coordinators you've had on staff since Ruffin McNeil. Maybe you can make a case for Art Kaufman under Tuberville in his final season. So you'd be happy to have either of them. You've got both of them on the staff. And I don't know if this is a case where, oh gosh, it's that the adage when they talk about having too many quarterbacks where,
What do you mean, like too many cooks in the kitchen or something?
Yeah, but like when they basically say like where two is none.
I don't know that one.
I don't know the exact phrasing. I'd mess it up anyways. But having two defensive coordinators on the staff may do more harm than good. It seems like both of their philosophies kind of gel. And I think it helps that Todd Orlando was not hired as a co-defensive coordinator, but as an assistant head coach and a linebackers coach, where Keith Patterson retains the defensive coordinator title. He does change the position group he's coaching. And I wonder if that was a concession to get Orlando on staff. You would expect one of these guys to move on after the 2020 football season. It's unlikely that you can amass coaching talent like Alabama does or like Chris Beard does on the basketball team, where you get guys woefully under-titled to stay on your staff just because. You know, you get like defensive assistants that were defensive coordinators at other schools. I think the best part is that in the termination process from University of Texas, that they are on the hook for the remainder of Orlando's salary, whatever Tech can't make up, to make sure that Orlando makes $1.7 million this season. Basically,
oh, I mean, that's nice.
I mean, I don't know how much Texas Tech would pay Orlando. But as an assistant head coach, not as a coordinator, I mean, he may make $400,000 from Tech, which is a lot for an assistant coach that's not a coordinator. But that also means that Texas is paying Orlando $1.3 million to coach against him.
Yeah, I like the sound of that. I mean, I know that Tech is also paying Coach Kingsbury, who's also being paid very handsomely by the Arizona Cardinals Association, to not coach here. But at least he's not coaching against us.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's not bad. You know, maybe that's why they went for it too, because financially it made sense.
And I know it wouldn't help you for next year's budget if you were operating under the assumption that Orlando was not going to be here, so you kind of divvied up his salary to everybody else. So everybody got a pay raise, and you basically said, here, Orlando, here's a dollar from us. Texas will cover the $1.699 left. You'll still make your right. $1.7 million. We're going to pay you a dollar and split up your $400,000 between everybody else. When he leaves, though, that would kind of leave you in a hole, since you couldn't then recall that salary back from the other coaches. But it would be interesting just to kind of stick it to Texas. Like, no, you're going to pay his entire salary just because that's part of his contract with you guys. And it's hilarious.
Yeah, we can't pay him any more than $1. That's it.
Yeah. Some more football news. Duffy had announced he was transferring to Tulane. We all thought that'd be a good fit. The starting quarterback from this past season graduated and was moving on. Would seem to fit their system, would really dominate that conference. It was all set for him to enroll in classes and get out there on Monday. But then it was released not too much later after that Duffy was going to reopen his recruitment. And then it was coming out that he was denied admission on academic issues.
Yikes.
Air quotes.
Yeah, it seems like they've obviously looked into his his off the field record or issues that came up before he played at I don't think he played at all at Tech before that, right?
I mean, if he
I
did,
think he was on the team, but I don't think he'd actually played a game.
I mean, it would have been very minimal.
Does that sound right?
Yeah.
But anyway, it just seems like they're falling back on academics, and it's strange because Duffy's transferring as a grad student, and supposedly his what do you take to get into grad school? Supposedly those test scores aren't high enough, and I don't know. I mean, how often does a player like Duffy, who has graduated college, get denied admission because of academics?
Yeah, it's not something you hear, especially after he's announced that he's going there. Like it seemed like it was a done deal. And then for the school to come out and say, no, actually, you're not going to make the cut. It seems like what you were saying, that they walked back their decision to let him in once more people got involved and probably said, hey, there's one too many red flags in his past.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate for him that they let it get that far before they said no. I mean, I'm not opposed to Tulane saying, no, we don't want Duffy. Like that's totally up to them. But to let it get to the point where like he's announced he's going there and all this stuff out in the public and then be like, oh no, we're not gonna let you in. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah. And he, like you said, I was excited. I was excited to see him there. I think he would have done great things for that conference. I don't know. It would have been a really perfect fit for him, I thought, because he would immediately play and immediately dominate. But, yeah, I don't like the fact that they walked it back either and allowed it to get to the point where he actually announced it. They both. I'm not sure if Tulane announced something or not, but Duffy did, and I know that there's no way that he would announce that without some sort of green light from someone within the Tulane organization, school, yeah. Whatever.
Let's talk about the national championship game last night.
Did you watch a little bit of that?
Bury the lead. We're 42 minutes in. And we're going to talk about the biggest college football game of the year. Now, I watched all of it. I was just so sure that the Tigers were going to win. I'm sorry. I had to do that. And I was even annoyed with myself for thinking that. No, I was really confident in LSU. I thought they had the momentum, especially coming off their big win over Oklahoma. Not that Clemson was not riding a wave of momentum with their win over Ohio State. But all the storylines about Joe Burrow being basically the most efficient quarterback of all time versus Trevor Lawrence, who just doesn't lose, all that kind of stuff. You get Clemson getting out to a little bit of a lead early on. LSU scratches back in it, very much like the AFC divisional game, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and then just kind of runs away with it. It was an exciting game as a pseudo LSU fan. I've said this before, but I have a lot of family that goes to LSU. I've got cousins that are currently enrolled there. I know my brother had looked at transferring there at one point. I had uncles and my grandfather, all of them that had gone to LSU. My uncle, actually, the one of the cousins that are attending LSU, was actually on their cheerleading team when he was in school, which is pretty cool. Like back when they had Mike the Tiger, like the live tiger on field, like they were.
Oh,
in charge.
Yeah.
He's got a cool picture with he and the squad there are on and around the cage with Mike in it. It's a really cool shot. Anyways, yeah, this also, we kind of mentioned last week, unofficially or officially, marks our 2-year anniversary with the 23 Personnel podcast. Hooray for us. Go us.
Yeah, we did it. We did it. And now we're done. That was it. We just said 2 years and that's it.
Yeah, it was a 2-year contract. We've run that out. No, I'm just kidding. we will be doing some kind of giveaway and some freebies probably. That was a definite statement followed up by a maybe. Our plan is to do some kind of printed stuff with the logo on it and send that out to you guys. Some of our most loyal listeners, as a thank you. And then kind of in celebration of 2 years. But yeah, we started this thing after the national title game 2 years ago. I think it was like the same night or the night after.
Yeah, I can't remember. It may have been the night after.
Yeah, because we've almost always recorded on Tuesday nights, and they play the game on Monday night.
Yeah, so that's the only thing that makes me think it was the night after.
Yeah. All right. Some of the most bizarre college football coaching news. Mike Leach, head coach at Mississippi State. He's made it to the SEC. And the SEC West at that.
Yes, he gets to face A&M every year.
I mean, that sounds good. Facing like Alabama, LSU.
Lane Kiffin.
That was funny. I can't remember if it was his introductory press conference, whatever. He basically said, I know I'm not supposed to like anything Ole Miss, but I like Lane.
And then I think he went on to kind of sarcastically say something like, yeah, but they don't know how to coach. Or I forgot how he worded it, but yeah, I noticed that too. And I think I'm all about it. It's going to be great. We get to just be spectators on the sidelines and just kind of see what happens. I'm really hoping he kind of leans back into the comments he made about A&M while he was at Tech. He had some choice words for them here and there, and kind of made fun of them, poked fun, and mostly lighthearted. But anyway, I think he's going to get an even bigger spotlight now that he's in the SEC, and we're going to be seeing a whole lot more Mike Leach in our timelines and on SportsCenter and wherever else he's speaking.
Yeah. So he joins Mississippi State members of the SEC West. He will have regular games versus LSU, Alabama, Auburn, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, and Arkansas. Cross-divisional games, he'll go up against Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, South Carolina, Kentucky, Missouri, Vanderbilt.
The SEC media days this year.
It's going to be wild with just he and Lane.
Yes. And all you need.
I mean, just the spectrum of personalities, right, between Ed Orgeron, Nick Saban, Mike Leach, and Lane Kiffin. Like the four of those guys in the same room, like I would imagine Nick Saban would just get annoyed with them so fast.
I think he would too.
Like, who is this jackass in this room with me right now?
And at the same point, I could see Ed Orgeron getting along with probably any human being on the planet.
So off-season fishing trips to the Keys, Ed Orgeron, Mike Leach.
Gosh, let's do it. Let's ESPN Plus. Come on, there's your show. There's a show right there. We will keep our subscriptions if y'all somehow get Papa Ed and Mike Leach on a show together.
Yeah. And then we touched on it last week with Baylor losing Matt Rhule to the Carolina Panthers. They're still in the midst of a coaching search. It's looking like Baylor is starting to go after Virginia Tech's Justin Fuente. He's considered the leading candidate, according to Pete Thamel. That would be an interesting move. Fuente was the coordinator for TCU several years ago when they were real big with Andy Dalton. And then he went to Memphis and is now at Virginia Tech.
Is he the head coach at Virginia Tech?
I believe so.
See, this is what's crazy to me. My friend and Adam and I were talking about this tonight. The fact that, and Adam actually mentioned this,
yes,
Baylor was on the doorstep of a death penalty 3 years ago, and now they've just lost their head coach. They have an 11-win team, and they're now poaching a head coach from Virginia Tech. A coach from Virginia Tech. I mean, this was this would have been unthinkable in, what, 04, 05, whenever Michael Vick was there, that a Virginia Tech coach would even consider coming to Waco.
Now, the thing that I think helps him is his salary right now for Virginia Tech is listed as $4 million. The salary for Matt Rhule was rumored to be in the $5 million range. So if he's going to get anywhere near that Matt Rhule money, I mean, that's a $1 million bump going from the ACC to the Big 12.
Just weird.
Yeah. So his coaching career started off at Illinois State as a quarterback's coach, then moved up to their OC quarterback's coach. 2007, 2008 was a running back's coach for TCU. 2009 through 2011 was the co-offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach for TCU. Like I said, that would have been with Andy Dalton leading up until their entrance into the Big 12. Then was a head coach at Memphis for 4 years, 2012 to 2015, and then since 2016 has been with Virginia Tech. He's been the ACC coach of the year, was the AAC coach of the year. He was the American Conference champion in 2014 with Memphis. He is the only name that I've really heard not a part of the current staff linked to this Baylor opening. And what's interesting, though, is how long it's taking Baylor to do this. You would assume that most athletic directors have a short list of guys they're interested in. Even when you get surprised with a coaching departure like Rhule going to the NFL kind of late, that the athletic director can move fairly quickly with his short list. It's been a week. We really haven't heard much else besides Joey McGuire and now Justin Fuente. I don't know what to take of that. I mean, what that would do for Baylor. I think it's if they were able to get Fuente, they you're getting a guy that has a lot more experience and skins on the wall than a Joey McGuire, even though he was, on the staff for a long time and got some real in-state connections with high school. But yeah, we're still interested to see how that plays out. Obviously, would love to see Matt Campbell get hired away somewhere else. Go be a offensive coordinator for Illinois State or something. I don't care. Just anywhere but a head coach in the Big 12.
Definitely has our number.
Yeah, strangely. And it's been that way for several years. Basically since he got there.
Aside from that, he's just been, decent.
Yeah, besides owning Texas Tech, he's done.
He's okay. He's done okay.
Yeah. You know who he did more than just okay, though? It was Pat Mahomes.
Oh, our guy. Our
boy, Patty Ice. This weekend, I'm sure you've heard of it by now, but they hosted the Houston Texans in the AFC Divisional Round playoff game. Got down 24-0 20 minutes into the game with 10 minutes to go in the second quarter. They were down 24 points. They erased that to take a 28-24 lead into halftime and then ended up defeating the Texans 51-31. They went on a streak of 41 unanswered points there in the middle of that game. It was such a wild stretch to go from feeling that the Texans had the game in hand and this 41-point swing to then feeling like the Chiefs had it in hand. Which they did. They ended up winning the game by 20. But to be down by 24 and then to win a game by 20, like that's worse feeling than when Tech had a 17-point lead against like Oklahoma State and lost the game by 17. Because that was a 34-point swing. This is a 44-point swing in an NFL playoff game.
I think it was there were so many records. I think that was a record that was the largest point swing ever in an NFL game. Mahomes threw for four TDs in a quarter, which ties a couple of playoff records.
And that's not like he scored a touchdown on a drive that ended at the very beginning of the quarter and then at the very end of the quarter.
No, like, it was they didn't four have the touchdowns. Ball, like you said, yeah, there's 10 minutes left, right?
Yeah, like three of them came within like a 3-minute stretch on the clock.
That's right. Well, and the other thing too was this is the first team since a Brett Favre team to score touchdowns in a playoff games on, I think it was seven consecutive drives. It was either six or seven consecutive drives. And that was from 07 or 09 or whenever Favre, you know, did that for the Packers. Those are just a few of the records I saw. 51 is the highest score that the Chiefs have ever scored in a playoff game. I think they scored 44 at some point. I was out running errands at the end, so I got to hear the KFYO guys. They simulcast all of the Chiefs broadcast 1340, the fan on AM or Talk 1340. Sorry. So if y'all want to check that out, that's always great because you get it. I like a good Homer broadcast. It's great. You know, I love listening to Sham for the Cowboys. He's very comforting to listen to, and he gets disgusted just like you do. I can't think of the guy with the Chiefs, but they're great to listen to as well. So anyway, they were going through rattling off some stats at the end, and what they were able to accomplish was just nothing short of extraordinary. I can't imagine a scenario where this type of game ever happens again.
Well, for those loyal Texans fans who were hoping for the departure of Bill O'Brien, this game may have been the straw that broke the camel's back. He has not been fired as of yet that I know of, but it would seem that this would help kind of assure that outcome, that Bill O'Brien would be fired after being up 24 points to then lose a playoff game by 20.
In a professional sport.
In a game where it's not like
football
that it was decided by some kind of key injury, right? It's not like they lost Deshaun Watson, Kenny Stills, their running backs. Like, I'm blanking on his name. Is it Carlos Hyde?
Oh, I don't know. I don't keep up with the Texans.
I don't follow the Texans either.
The zombie Oilers.
The Oilers. Anyways, so our boy Patty Ice moving on to host the AFC Championship game next week versus the Titans, the sixth seeded Titans. Actually, they're the last wild card team to make it in. They took care of the Ravens last weekend. Then you're
which
these,
was completely unexpected.
No, and then you're getting all these weird comparisons where they're saying two former Big 12 players are going to go up against each other with Ryan Tannehill and Pat Mahomes, but. It's weird that they're looking back at former Big 12, and they call him a quarterback, but Tannehill hardly played quarterback at A&M. He was mostly a receiver. He did play some backup quarterback, but I don't know if he ever started for them, for the Aggies as a quarterback in the Big 12. Anyways, he's now with the Titans.
Well, and it doesn't have as much cachet to it. That they never faced each other, obviously. They're years apart. Yeah, they weren't even in the conference at the time Mahomes was there. So that's just kind of a weird comparison to make.
Now, they're you know, both, well, I wouldn't say West Texas because Pat Mahomes is from White House. That was more East Texas. Anyways, the thing that I think would concern me as a lifelong Chiefs stan here would be trying to contain Derrick Henry, monster running back.
Yes. Yes. Definite concern.
But when you've got Patty Ice behind center, I mean, it's hard. It's hard to lose a lot of confidence.
Anything can happen. And, you know, speaking of that, what is it? The Chiefs Titans game. You know, I'm not even sure what the line is, but if I had some money on the game, I would probably go ahead and put it on the Chiefs. And I don't know about you guys, but for me, a game is 10 times more exciting when I'm putting money on it. So sometimes I have a gut feeling about a matchup. Sometimes I'm just betting on my team because, hey, they're my team. So if you're going to bet this season, you should do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you really want to support your team this season, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in the game with mybookie.ag. And if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. You can use promo code CHAIR, C-H-A-I-R, to activate the offer. That's promo code CHAIR to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Go Chiefs.
Yes, go Chiefs. Sorry for interrupting you with a cough there. It just, this thing just can't kick it.
You can't, man. I feel for you. That stinks. I haven't been like you said earlier. I mean, I don't know when the last time I was that sick for that long. It's been a while.
It's nuts, man. It seems like as soon as we teased it, Keith Patrick was like, you know what? It's time. Dinger Derby Podcast released an episode late last week. I guess it was Thursday morning. It's listed as a fall recap. Let's be honest. He released it in January. But he also goes over the schedule, but he's joined, by Dr. Mike Gustafson and George Watson to break down the fall camp, the Red and Black series. They talk rosters and newcomers and then look over the 2020 schedule. It's a time commitment here of just over 2 hours, but anything with Keith Patrick and those guys, Mike Gustafson, George Watson, it's quality content. We'll keep you entertained, get you ready. Baseball is exactly a month away from today. First pitch is on Valentine's Day versus Houston Baptist, February 14th. Be sure to download that episode, give it a listen, break it up if you have to. 2 hours.
Yeah,
plenty of content to get you going and start those juices flowing for baseball season.
Yeah, and it's easily structured in a way where you can break it down because, like you said, they kind of go through fall camp and the Red and Black series and the schedule itself. You know, players that have transferred that they think they're really going to kind of miss, or you know, guys that are no longer on the roster. It's just amazing to hear these three talk because I am, you know, a very passive baseball fan, as most of y'all know who listen, and the intricate details that the three of them can recall at different times when they're talking about Omaha, or when they're talking about a playoff series, or when they're talking about a game in 1997 or something. I mean, that it's just a lot of fun to listen to them. So even if you're like me and you're not a wealth of baseball knowledge, especially Texas Tech baseball, it's still a great listen because these guys just enjoy talking baseball, and you can tell.
Yeah, it's a great episode. Be sure to check it out. Quickly, let's get to your questions. We had two of our regulars tweet at us this evening. Red Reset Man brings up something that we haven't actually talked about yet. With the King news that dropped yesterday, would you want him to transfer to Tech? He's referring to the quarterback from Houston, Derek King, announcing he was entering the transfer portal, which is interesting because basically at the beginning of the season, before he hit his 4-game mark, he decided to sit out and redshirt this season. And it looked like it was a move from Holgorsen to kind of stack the deck for this upcoming year to get his best players, to learn his system, to be healthy and get ready to go for the 2020 season. The looks of it's backfired. Derek King is leaving Houston. So Red Reset Man asks, would we be interested in him transferring to Tech? We need quarterback depth after Bowman gets hurt 3 games into the season, which I hope is tongue in cheek, and MacGyver hasn't played since the second game of his senior season. Looks like a fragile quarterback room. So, Michael, what say you? Would you want Derek King transferring to Tech?
He brings up a good point. I mean, who else does Tech have? The kid from Eastland doesn't come until 2021, yeah. Right?
Baron Morton would be here next spring. Donovan Smith is coming in from Friendship.
But okay.
He would be a true freshman.
Sure.
Hasn't played quarterback full time very long. He played this season and did very well. I'm sure Keith Patrick would tell us all about what great things he was able to do as he watched every game of Donovan Smith's this season. But yeah, your quarterback room, like Red Reisman points out, is thin. You've got Bowman, who hasn't played a full season yet because of injury issues. The freshman that came in behind him redshirted this year because of an injury. Supposedly was going to be competing for a starting job, but I don't know how much stock to put into that. You got an incoming freshman who hasn't played quarterback full-time for very long, although he's a coach's son and will be, you know, a coach that is on the Texas Tech staff and did really well this past season. Now, it does seem kind of like a foregone conclusion that a grad transfer quarterback pops up that they're going to land in Norman. And supposedly there was some kind of snide, sarcastic remarks from Gary Patterson and Mike Gundy saying, oh, well, we know where he's going to go.
Anyway,
he's going to end up in Norman. And then Brian made this joke. I don't know if it was on Twitter or in the Slack chat, but that Lincoln Riley needs to prove to everybody that he can recruit and coach up his own dang quarterback instead of grabbing everybody else's.
Yeah. I can't decide. I can't decide if I'd want him on there or not. And I'm trying to find out how many years of eligibility he has left. Do you know?
I would assume he just has one. There's not many grad transfers that have multiple years left.
I think I would be open to it. I would be open to it. Why not? I mean, he could possibly win the starting job from Bowman if that were to happen. But man, this staff sure is, they sure are dedicated to Bowman. So I'm not quite sure, but I think I would welcome it. Sure. Come on in. Watched him, you know, luckily Tech got up to enough of a lead, but he started to torch Tech pretty good in Lubbock. And then the year before, they threw him in at the end of the game in Houston, and he about won it for him.
Yeah. King graduated from Houston on December 14th. This is from ESPN article when he announced his intent to transfer, meaning he would be eligible to play next season regardless of where he lands. He will have one season of eligibility remaining as a redshirt senior. During his Houston career, King has accounted for more than 7,000 yards across multiple positions, including nearly 5,000 passing yards. His best season came in 2018, his first as primarily a quarterback, when he accounted for 50 touchdowns, third best in the FBS that season, threw for nearly 3,000 yards, and rushed for almost another 700. Yeah, I mean, I'd be okay if you want to add a talented, experienced quarterback to your room. I'm not sure if his style of play is necessarily what David Yost is looking for. I'm sure that he would be given the freedom to run a whole lot more than we saw Duffy do this season, assuming there's healthy depth behind him. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I don't think he would automatically walk in as a starter. He would be competing for the starting position. And I think, right. I think competition is enough to kind of not scare away, but to keep away a lot of grad transfer quarterbacks, because they're not looking to go somewhere to compete and then sit their last year of eligibility. I think they want to go somewhere where they know they've got a better than good shot at starting and playing as a starting quarterback. And I just don't think that Yost, Wells, and Texas Tech can offer that to King.
Yeah, I don't think you can. And that may be, I would imagine that's what King's looking for. He's looking for the Jalen Hurts deal. He's looking for I want to show up and practically be guaranteed a spot, because when you're that talented, and you are, and you want to, you know, this is your last year to basically audition for the NFL, you want to make it count. And I don't think Wells would guarantee that to him. I don't think he should necessarily, but there are probably teams out there who would, and who need King there, and they don't feel as confident in their current starting quarterback, but I think Yost and Wells are pretty joint at the hip with Bowman. So if it came down to them deciding it, I'm with you. I think they would tell him the truth and say he'd have to compete. And there may be places elsewhere where he could play immediately and earn that starting position with ease.
Yeah. So the guy waiting in the wings up there in Norman, Spencer Rattler, is supposed to be really good. And he may be good enough again to kind of deflect any of those grad transfer guys that are looking to land somewhere. Just because I don't think, even though with the success that Lincoln Riley has had with grad transfer quarterbacks, that he could, again, offer that kind of position to Derek King. Although it's kind of a foregone conclusion that a talented grad transfer quarterback pops up, he's going to the Sooners. Last question. Peter Puente says, am I the only one who thinks Shannon is a huge part of the offense? Going back to basketball. Absolutely. Since that DePaul game up in Chicago, he's been a big piece of scoring and igniting the offense. You felt his absence the past couple of games. He goes on to say, Ramsey gets all the love and points, but when he was out, Shannon was incredible, especially against DePaul. I think he's the best driver we have and defers to JR too much. I think deferring and passing is a good thing to have, especially in a motion offense. But I think we're still trying to find that balance where we're not just throwing the ball around for the sake of throwing the ball around to move the ball in a motion offense.
Yeah.
There's been several times tonight even where you had shot clock violations because the guys that were throwing the ball around were passing up open shots. And I wasn't sure why. You know, it's not that Davide Moretti was looking for a wide open shot. Like, he had space enough to get off several shots and he passed it up. There was one down low where they threw the ball down into Holyfield on the low post. Basically, all he had to do was turn around and lay it up, or, you know, a little hook shot or whatever. But with 2 seconds on the shot clock fires it back outside to Edwards, who, you know, has to try to force a shot. And then ends up getting hit with a shot clock violation because he didn't get it off in time. I think Shannon plays a big part of the offense. I also think, in general, the offense can be a little bit more selfish. Maybe it's not the right word. And I'm not saying that you should be settling for jump shots. That's not what this team needs. But we need more aggression, more drives, and not passing up open shots when you do have them. And we saw Shannon was able to do some of that. We hope to get him back in the lineup here pretty soon. It looked like he was going to come in tonight. I would assume he'd be ready to go for this weekend's game since he almost got into tonight's game. And then obviously if you get Ntombwe and Tyreek Smith back anytime soon, the rotation is going to be just off the chart, just deep with talent. I think that'll do it for questions tonight, Michael, unless you have something else to add.
No, I mean, Shannon was, he's been missed big time because he is that spark. He can, he can create something out of nothing off the dribble. That DePaul game, we've talked about it on here too. That was just a fun game to watch. He also, I think he exploded during that Oklahoma State game. Of course, a lot of Tech players did. But I know that he has been missed big time offensively. So, it, like you said, it looks like he should be able to get back in the game against Iowa State at least a little bit. And then I'd really look for him against TCU. But, you know, not to emphasize or anything, that TCU should be a winnable game. So if you've got a guy who may be trying to work himself back into the lineup physically, that may be a good place to drop him in.
All right. So, Michael, what did we learn this week?
Well, the only thing I really learned was I got a Chromebook and it doesn't come with a caps lock button. And that is, I've loved everything about this Chromebook except for that fact. And that fact has driven me insane because I use caps locks way more than I think I do. I have all these random passwords now I have to type, and I try to make some emphasized points on our Slack chat or something here and there. And the only way you can get Caps Lock to pop up is to hit Alt and then the search button, which is where the Caps Lock button is.
Well, why do they have a search button? That's just strange.
I don't know. It's under the tab button and above the shift button. And there's a button. It's just a search button. So I don't know how many times this week I've hit that search button thinking it's Cap Lock, and I just can't get used to it. Anyway, end of rant, because this little, I used some Christmas gift cards. I pulled some of those together and got a little $250 Chromebook, and it's got the tab, you know, it can convert to a tablet. It's a laptop. It's great. I'm loving the heck out of it, but this is taking some getting used to. What about you? What'd you learn?
Well, I haven't been able to play as much Farming Simulator as I've wanted to this week. Going back to work has really put a damper, and the time I've been able to commit to playing, still love the game. It's again, inexplicably one of my favorite games I've probably ever played. And I don't have any experience growing up in the ag community like you did, but it's still something that spoke to me. I don't know.
Completely satisfying. There's just something about working the digital soil. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. But I am in the middle of my first full harvest of cotton on my second game. I've got so many fields going. I've got three cotton strippers going. I don't know. It's enjoyable. I've put in, you know, I probably played about an hour this afternoon, because I had a training at work that wrapped up about 3 o'clock. So I was able to get out of there a little early and come home before the family was ready. And, was able to do that before, you know, getting ready for dinner and the basketball game and all that kind of stuff. It's just something that I'll probably be playing for quite some time.
Yeah, me too. And I don't know if I should tell you this, but they have a mobile version.
I don't know if I needed to know that.
The mobile version is, I think it seems like they kind of do this every other year thing. So if it's an odd year, I think that's when they release the full blown, you know, super detailed, all these different things you can do. They release the console and PC versions on odd years, but then they release a mobile version on the even years. So Farm Sim 20 is out, and I bought it for $6 on the Play Store.
Nice.
And have been playing with that on my tiny little, I've got the S10e, so it's even got the smaller screen. I'm terrible at it, at the controllers. I've gotten a little better at controlling it, and it's hardcore, because there are no contracts, so you can't make money off of contracts. You are given some land. You can't sell it, that I can figure out how. You have a lot less equipment to choose from. You can't lease equipment. You can only buy equipment. So I think it's one of those that if I would have played that first, I don't know if I'd have liked it as much. But having played the full-blown version and knowing that this is, okay, this is like a stripped-down version of it where you're really limited in what you can do. But you could still do all the livestock stuff. You can still do all the animals and everything. It's tweaked slightly different for mobile. And the other thing, you can buy money. I think like a dollar gives you, I need to look, I may look it up while we're on here, but I think a dollar gives you $100,000 in the game, something like that, which I have not done that, Spencer, just for the record. I have not spent money to buy money, to buy equipment in the mobile game. I have bought some DLC for the Xbox game. Oh, you're hearing it starting up. Sorry. So I just wanted to see real quick, because it's just so bizarre to me. I've heard about people doing that. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, you just buy a few things on these mobile games, and the next thing you know, you have like a $45, you know, monthly bill for this. So anyway, oh, okay, here's what you can do. So for 99 cents, you can get 200,000 coins, which is, you know, that's just the monetary thing that they use in the mobile game. So $200,000. So for 99 cents, you could get you, you know, a pretty nice tractor. $1.99, you can get 500,000, or for $2.99, you can get 1,000,000 coins. And I'm sure you can buy more than one of those at a time if you really want to. But I am doing everything in my power to not do that.
Where do you find the time to also play this on your phone?
Lunch break.
All right.
And you would be surprised, you know, you can, since you can assign workers to do stuff, you can queue it up on the phone, and you know, you've got a field to harvest. Just get the worker to harvest that field and he'll take care of it while you're driving home.
All right. So I don't know if I'll spend the $6 to buy the game, for the phone, but
you probably shouldn't,
but maybe I will. Maybe I will. All right. That'll do it for us on the 23 Personal Podcast. We will see you guys again next week. Until then, wreck 'em.
Thank you for listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast and sharing our fandom for the Texas Tech Red Raiders. You can connect with us on Twitter at 23 Personnel, Spencer at Puntsuck, and Michael at Michael_LBK. And find even more great content over on stakingtheplains.com. Help us out by rating the show and leaving a review on iTunes, and subscribe on whatever channel you listen to podcasts. Remember to tell your friends about the show. The guys will be back next week with another episode. And until then, guns up and let the tortillas fly.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know, with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15, discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.